Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. ICE agents again pelt protesters with rubber bullets, pepper balls, and tear gas outside a Broadview immigration facility.
ICE's cruelty has no bounds.
A chaotic week of immigration raids and massive protests with no let-up in sight.
We know that we're reversing that divestment and putting Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Chicago educators say they're committed to a black student success plan, even if the Trump administration says it'll pull funding from CPS.
We need affordability, we need affordable housing, we need development on those vacant lots.
In a whirlwind day at city council plagued with hours-long delays, alders pass a new affordable housing measure for communities near the Obama Presidential Center, as well as a watered-down ordinance okaying coach houses and sign off on a new Chicago Fire soccer stadium in the 78. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Quinn Myers from Block Club Chicago, Monica Ang from Axios Chicago, Sasha Ann Simons, host of the new show In the Loop on WBEZ, and Jim Daly from Southside Weekly. Thank you all for being here. Let's get right to it. And lots to get to. We have seen daily protests outside of ICE's Broadview facility. Things got very heated earlier today. Monica, you were on the ground. What's the latest?
Well, you know, people can't get anywhere near the building anymore. There's a fence that Broadview officials say is illegal. They've demanded that it be taken down. They say it's a safety hazard. ICE has not removed it. When I talked to ICE officials, they said, we put it up after rioters attacked law enforcement. I haven't seen any corroboration on rioters attacking law enforcement, but it was still up. But despite the fact that protesters can't get anywhere near the building, they were fired on multiple times today. If I start coughing, you'll know it's because I still have pepper spray in my lungs. There seemed to be no rhyme or reason for why these relentless pepper spray and tear gas attacks happened today.
Well, you know, and Quinn, as Monica mentioned, we've heard from Broadview officials saying there's no permit for this fence. It's potentially blocking emergency vehicles. You know, they've been saying, we don't want this facility in our town. Is right. There any sign of, you know, this impasse coming to an end?
I haven't seen one. I know the Broadview mayor sent ICE a letter this week asking them to take down this illegal fence, which is a sign, I think, that the protests were working and, you know, stopping or hampering this facility from operating fully. But Broadview is saying this isn't just about a First Amendment and safety issue. We're actually seeing, you know, our neighbors dealing with tear gas into their yards and their houses.
Dogs.
Yeah. So it is becoming a quality of life problem on top of a, you know, First Amendment issue.
And of course, we've heard all sorts of things from inside the facility about, you know, potentially dangerous, unsanitary conditions, you know, that folks in there are not necessarily being treated humanely.
And that's what they're protesting. They want more transparency. They want more accountability. They want to know, what are these people charged with? I've had a FOIA out for 8 months now, and I still don't know the names and the charges against the people they've abducted from Chicago.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sasha, we also saw Border Patrol Marine units going down the Chicago River. Does that seem like it has a practical purpose, or is this more of a show of force?
I think it's definitely a show of force. I mean, if you saw the images going up and down the Chicago River today, I mean, they're standing there literally posing with military-style weapons, and the logistics just don't make sense. Who are you arresting on the river?
Right. Who's getting
there?
A glass of wine on the river walk.
Maybe people swimming, you know, in a race. The race was last week.
Yeah. It's absolutely just a sign of the fact that we've just got these front row seats right now in Chicago to just the most intense, most worrisome political time, I think, of not just my nearly 20-year journalism career, but my lifetime.
Well, and to your point about this being, you know, folks sort of posing, obviously so many of these things are designed for the camera.
Absolutely. I mean, at this point, there's been such a force from the federal government, so much focus nationally on Chicago. It's all a show, I think. I think it's all a show at this point, and it's all to just sort of put points in Trump's bucket.
We're waiting to see. We don't even have numbers exactly on how many people have been arrested and detained and possibly deported from the Chicago area. Some estimates around 500 people. 550, yeah. But we don't know if that's changed in the past couple of days, and we haven't seen exact accounting, which is pretty par for the course for ICE. They're not very transparent, as Monica was saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just what I was going to ask next. You know, Jim, you know, we're hearing from immigrant advocacy groups who are sort of tracking federal agents' actions, you know, where they're going, what they're doing, trying to get a number of people detained every day, but we really don't have a clear picture of how many folks have been detained, or so, you know, how long this so-called midway blitz will last.
That's correct. I mean, as the other panelists have said, ICE is not transparent at all. There are groups of grassroots volunteers who are doing rapid response to let people know when ICE is in neighborhoods. But a lot of these raids, until they appear in a highly edited TikTok video, propaganda video, we don't know why they're there or what they're doing. And it's really dangerous. It creates a lot of fear in communities. They're targeting people who have no criminal records. A few weeks ago, they killed a father of two who had no criminal record during a traffic stop. So it's very dangerous, it's very chilling, which I think is part of the point as well.
Yeah, certainly a very unusual precedent mm-hmm. they're setting, to say the least. Well, turning to some city council news, there was quite a lot of action yesterday in a very, very late meeting.
It depends on how you define action. Some laws were passed eventually.
Yes. Well, one of them, after much debate, Alders finally approved a measure allowing tiny homes in Chicago after a decades-long ban, but kind of a watered-down ordinance.
Yeah, and we're talking about coach houses and basement units, attic units, basically additional dwelling units, ADUs. And until now, you've had to get a zoning change for most of the city to be able to build one of these, to add another unit to your property. And now you're going to be able to do it citywide with some very big restrictions in single-family districts, the bungalow belt particularly, and pockets elsewhere. Aldermen get to opt in if they want this to be allowed in their ward, or they can say, no, we don't want it, or they can say, actually, I want it on this street, but not this street. It's going to cause some confusion, but it is an expansion. It's being touted by its backers as a win for affordable housing. So it's a little confusing, I know, but it is an expansion of this system.
Aldermanic prerogative strikes again.
Exactly.
I talked to Alderman Bennett Lawson, who supported it, who sponsored it, and I also talked to Marty Quinn in the 13th, who opposed it and asked for these changes. Also, you have to have apprentice workers doing the work if you are building a brand new coach house. If it's just attic or basement, you're okay. And Marty said, I said, so are you ever going to allow ADUs in your neighborhood? He said, we're going to have to see. He said, this is a living, breathing, changing law. I can say yes, I can say no. I want to see how it plays out.
And there's already been some pushback on this apprenticeship stipulation. People say it's going to add a lot of expense to building a coach house and might, detract or inhibit people from actually doing
this. I asked them exactly how much is this going to add. They said, ask the CFL.
Yeah.
Well, we know Mayor Johnson's pleased. He's pleased that there's a compromise and said, oh, this shows that compromise can happen at City Hall.
Well, and especially because, some of his, affordable housing efforts, things like Bring Chicago Home, have not necessarily seen success. So, right. Even if we're chipping away at this massive shortage of units, a little bit is going to be a victory for the mayor's office.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Jim, we also saw a compromise deal, speaking of affordable housing, for some protections for communities near the Obama Presidential Center. I mean, remind us what backers of that agreement are concerned about.
They are concerned about the Obama Center gentrifying the neighborhood around it. According to the mayor's office, home prices have increased, 130%, I think, in that neighborhood,
right, yeah.
Since Obama Center went in there. The CBA coalition never really got buy-in from the Obama Foundation for a CBA, so they had to go through a grassroots, approach to get this passed through City Council. The original attempt at it stalled in City Council, and then this was brought in by Jeanette Taylor, right? And it's a start. So it's a pilot program that doesn't cover all of South Shore, but it does create some affordable housing set-asides. Mm-hmm. Vacant lots will be developed into affordable housing. So it's a start. One question is whether this could also be applied to other developments like the 78 or the United Center, where development around that is going to gentrify the neighborhood, and there's no set-asides for those communities. So it'd be interesting to see if that would be rolled out more broadly.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the 78, Monica, Chicago Fire also got sign-off for that shiny new stadium that they want to build. I mean, is this finally going to spur some development on that very long vacant tract of land?
Yeah, it's been sitting there for a long time. The casino was proposed there, but Asian American groups, knowing the high gambling addiction in the Asian American community, said no thanks. And actually, they had some questions before this was passed. The city council did pass it, but I heard from Chinatown groups who said, I would have liked a little more collaboration with the community. I would have liked a little more discussion, but it looks like it's going to happen. $650 million. Joe Mansueto is going to be footing most of that. There is going to be some city expense in there, but Will it perk up the area? Will we all go to soccer games? Maybe.
Yeah.
City Council loves to talk about how much they love this project because Joe Mansueto is putting up the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars himself, right, unlike a certain football team who's been asking for a couple billion dollars to build a new stadium. So, you know, when City Council gets to say, all right, a millionaire's investing all that money, all right, come right in.
Yeah, it's good for them.
And
good
sweet setup.
Yeah, and it's hard to, you know, I think given the budget constraints of Chicago, folks don't really want to see us spending massive amounts of money on a stadium like
a
that.
A soccer stadium like that.
Yeah, there's not much appetite there. All right, well, looking at some state news, Sasha, Illinois has bucked the federal recommendations when it comes to COVID booster shots. What are the details there?
Illinois has dropped some new guidance for COVID shots this week, really breaking away from the federal government. The FDA, we saw earlier, had limited eligibility to just, you know, folks who are over 65 or high risk of getting sick with coronavirus if you were to contract it. The CDC weeks later revised that and advised, yes, people over 65 can get the shot, but also young people. Just make sure, with the caveat, make sure you consult with your doctor. Now Illinois is saying, you know what, we want this for everybody. So all adults over the age of 18, essentially covers all pregnant women, essentially covers all children. There's some fine print there of, you know, 6 months to 23 months, and if you're between 2 and 17, there are some risk categories that they'll prioritize. But yeah, a move from the feds, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, and I mean, do you think we might see more things like this in the months to come, where the federal government says one thing and coalitions of states make vastly different recommendations, given how much is changing with sort of the health and science recommendations from the administration?
I expect so. And it's interesting to see this happening during a Republican administration, which is, you know, they purport to be the party of small government, but here we've got government, you know, leaving states to their own devices. I think that the It goes without saying that the people who are in charge of health at the federal level are not the most responsible or experienced people in America, and they are making recommendations that fly in the face of a lot of past knowledge, scientific fact. The attack on Tylenol the other day was another one. And so states, I think especially blue states, are going to be stepping up to fill that gap and to keep their citizens safe.
Yeah. Well, you know, Quinn, Governor Pritzker, he's asking state leaders to think through some potential budget trims, looking at 4% possibly across departments. What's he concerned about?
Right. Well, so Trump's big, beautiful bill, which passed earlier this year, you know, includes tax cuts to billionaires, cuts to Medicaid, cuts to food stamps. So Pritzker is kind of asking his department heads to say, set aside 4% in case this hits us harder. We don't totally know the full picture yet of how this is going to impact the state. So those cuts haven't been made yet, but they are possibly going to be made through a variety of efficiencies, limiting hiring, travel, that sort of thing.
And it feels like we just got through the state budgeting process a few months ago where they walked it right up to the deadline as usual, and now there might be an upheaval again.
Right. I know some Republicans were pushing back and saying, well, this is proof that the budget was bloated and Governor Pritzker is an irresponsible spender. So, you know, getting that pushback already.
Well, speaking of someone who thinks Governor Pritzker is an irresponsible spender, his most recent competitor, Darren Bailey, once again running for the Republican nomination for governor. Monica, what's his message this time? He seems like he might be shifting focus geographically.
His message seems to be freedom and fiscal responsibility. I mean, I think he's probably going to use his 4% like crazy, saying, if I was the king of Illinois, Trump would look very kindly on us and give us plenty of money, and look what Pritzker's doing for you. But he also said Pritzker's trying to take away your freedoms. And I'm not sure exactly what that means. Is it because, you know, it seems like it's maybe the right that's saying you can't say these things. So, but that was when he had his first appearance, his first announcement. He's like, freedom and economy. That's what we're going to hit Pritzker on.
I'm curious to see how he defines his campaign, because he lost by 500,000 votes last time, and he is, you know, heavily aligned with the MAGA movement. You know, moderate Republicans have done well in Illinois, but it's pretty much impossible lately to win a statewide primary as a moderate Republican.
And I wonder if the Republican Party in Illinois will say, look, you had your chance. I'm not sure that Illinois as a whole is going to go for someone as far to the right as you are.
Yeah, I mean, the late Jim Edgar, who we were just memorializing in the last few days, kind of person who would have a tough time possibly getting elected these days. Mm-hmm. Well, Sasha, the Trump administration is pulling back millions in grant money over CPS's Black Student Success Plan, policies affirming trans students. What do you think is going to, you know, the come of this? Is CPS, so far it seems like they're going to stand their ground.
CPS is definitely standing 10 toes down on this one here. And, you know, and Trump's pulling a lot of money, $5.8 million to be exact. But CPS is saying the end result will be an $8 million hole. But let's put it in context. This would be an $8 million hole in a more than $10 billion budget. To me, still a lot of money.
Yeah, right.
Million, billion.
I think any journalist thinks $8 million is a lot of money.
However you slice it, that's a lot of money. But I think CPS has been very firm. The district is moving forward with its Black Student Success Plan, moving forward with just rights for transgender students, being able to use bathrooms and locker rooms that correspond to their gender identity. And they're not budging. So as a result, though, Trump taking that punishment out by way of funds. Mm-hmm.
I should say that, you know, months ago we had this thing from the DOE, Department of Education, saying, you know, any school district that has diversity, equity, inclusion is going to lose all its funding. And I'm glad they didn't, you know, follow through on that. I think they gave 30 days to end all of it. And then they had that snitch site where you could rat out your teacher and tell us, you know, if they have it. And I'm glad nothing came of it. So crossing fingers that maybe this will be similar.
Well, yeah. And it also seems somewhat nebulously defined what exactly DEI programs are, because, right, you know, when you talk to, you know, teachers and district officials, they say, look, these are students who face divestment for decades. So, you know, this is not just coming out of the clear blue sky.
Right. Yeah.
Well, speaking of some funding clawbacks, Sasha, a federal judge also ruled in favor of Illinois, a coalition of 20 other states, saying the administration can't withhold disaster relief funding. Why were they trying to pull that back?
Yeah, so another victory for Attorney General Kwame Raoul here, who's been busy for the last 9 months just suing the Trump administration.
How much sleep is he getting?
Left and right. But they were trying to claw back this money. You know, the state argued that this would jeopardize their ability to protect public safety. I mean, the federal government was going after sanctuary jurisdictions, right? So just like Chicago and Illinois, and saying, yeah, we're going to take $2 billion away in terms of disaster relief funds. And of course, Illinois fighting back, as well as those 20 other states, saying, like, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. Second of all, the language is so vague that we would have no idea of knowing essentially what conduct you would constitute as satisfying the federal government. So it's like, get this language out of here. We're fighting back.
Yeah. Well, another big story this week, Jim, we just learned today that the major TV station owner Sinclair is ending its blackout of Jimmy Kimmel's late night show, who, of course, came back on the air earlier this week on ABC. Nexstar still blocking, at last check, Kimmel from its airwaves. Do you think they may sort of back off that position soon, given that someone else has kind of caved on that?
I think it remains to be seen. They do still have a case pending before the FCC where they're trying to monopolize, essentially. So they have an incentive to please the Trump administration. At the same time, what we've seen, I think, is that this is an example of the Trump administration backing down when people stand up. And in this case, people voted with their dollars by pulling subscriptions from Disney, and Disney responded by bringing Kimmel back. Mm-hmm. Trump raged on social media about this and threatened to sue Disney and ABC, but we'll see if he comes through on that. And I think there's two really important takeaways from Kimmel. One is that the current president is not yet a totalitarian. He does not completely control what's on the airwaves, and he doesn't control the decisions that people make. The other is a point that Jimmy Kimmel himself made in his returning monologue that I think is really important, and that was that he said he himself is a comedian and he's not very important, even though that battle is an important one.
Right.
He pointed out the attacks on other journalists and other media. The Trump administration's trying to deport a journalist in Atlanta, for example, right now. Journalists are taking pepper balls to the face in Broadview right now. And Trump has made no secret of his animosity towards the media in lawsuits and otherwise. And so in a country that has a First Amendment, it's really important to keep sight of that in the Kimmel story, that the media as a whole is under attack.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Quinn, we saw FCC Chairman Brendan Carr pretty openly threatening ABC, to take Kimmel off, Since he's been back on air, Carr's been more or less silent. I mean, do you think he saw how loud the outcry was and decided to back off, or is this more of just kind of a tactical decision to be quiet in this moment?
You know, impossible for me to really say, but I do think,
be a mind reader.
I mean, I think they want to go after Kim. They're not done going after Kimmel or other journalists. They're suing the Wall Street Journal. They're suing the New York Times for like $15 billion over not just even one story, you know, a whole range of what they call, you know, biased anti-Trump stories. So there will be more attacks on this, and, you know, we'll see if these corporations stand up to them or if they make a deal.
Yeah, and the Wall Street Journal, owned by a Trump ally, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
I think some of the fractures within the Republican Party, like Ted Cruz criticizing this, Joe Rogan criticizing it, maybe gave pause to Trump and his folks about doing more of this.
Well, and Sasha, you have to imagine this is the kind of thing that they see, and, you know, when Democrats are in power, you know, they don't want, you know, Republicans don't want Democrats to use the arm of government to silence them.
And that's exactly what Ted Cruz was saying, is like, you know, at some point there will be another Democrat in power and they're going to use this exact tool against us. We don't want that.
Yeah, there's a reason that this shouldn't be a part of the playbook. Well, Monica, you've been taking a look at the push for video gambling in Chicago. Where do things stand on that?
Well, they held the vote yesterday, but it was very interesting to see that a committee actually advanced it. For those who don't know, you know, when you go to a suburb and you see all this video gaming in the windows of every laundromat and pizzeria, it's like a slot machine. But if we actually allowed it in the city limits, Bally's would be pretty upset, because the Bally's casinos actually give us a hearty chunk of their tax revenue from those. They might stop giving the city money. It might change the character of the city to have them in there. So it did not go anywhere in the full city council last week, but who knows? I mean, you know, it's always been something that was a little too lurid to bring into the city, but when we're facing a $1.2 billion gap in the next budget, maybe it's something they're going to seriously consider.
The city is desperate for money, but the question should be, like, with the casino, like, is this actually good for our residents?
Right. Is this just regressive?
It is regressive. And the flip side is, these already exist illegally in Chicago. Like, you can go to
sweepstakes machines.
You can find them in gas stations in different places.
Oh,
so
we were out last night.
There was a convenience store around the corner from my old place.
There were five machines and two people happily there for an extended period of time.
The argument is, you're leaving some money on the floor that the city could be getting.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, an absence. Like, how do you get into that whole equation of cost-benefit is a different conversation.
And the city CFO said it's not a slam dunk on the money. I did ask the mayor the other day if he'd been to Bally's recently and seen, you know, the patrons are largely low-income people. And I said, is this really how you want to be shoring up the city's finances, on the backs of people with the least ability to pay? And he said, no, I want to tax the rich. But he didn't say what he's going to do about the casino soaking all these people for money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to your earlier point about the concerns of locating, you know, the casino near the 78, Bally's buses folks in from largely,
China,
you know,
Town,
Vietnamese.
Yeah,
you know, so it's not as though that isn't happening.
Right.
So you have to imagine, and of course, Bally's itself has not necessarily been a cash cow for the city in the way that they hoped it would.
Very disappointing returns.
All right, well, a little lighter proposal. Quinn, a Chicago alderperson wants to allow people to bring their four-legged companions into restaurants. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
So Alderman Timmy Knutson, Lincoln Park Alderman, is basically introducing an ordinance that would allow restaurants to opt in to letting dogs into food establishments. You don't have to do it. You know, he had the good quote in Block Club saying, I don't imagine Alinea would take us up on letting a dog sit next to you. But, you know, he's saying there is a certain type of restaurant or coffee shop that's losing out on business because people can't bring their dogs in. You can currently bring dogs into taverns. I believe it's the food license that is the issue. This has been getting a lot of pushback. I've just seen on social media people being like, dog owners need to chill. Like, they have enough. They bring their dog everywhere already. We need a couple places in our society that are dog-free. But at the same time, some business owners are supporting and saying, yeah, we would love to have more dogs here at a brewery, at a, you know, an open-air restaurant, that kind of thing.
Although some of the, you know, more unusual food items at Alinea might kind of look like a nice treat for those dogs, so who knows? All right, well, I would take the four of you anywhere, whether the Alder people allow it or not.
We're going to Alinea right after this.
That's right, but that's all the time we have for this evening. So our thanks to Quinn Myers, Monica Ang, Sasha Ann Simons, and Jim Daly. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
Before we go, we want to acknowledge some members of the WTTW News family who are leaving us. Paul Kane has produced for this program and for Chicago Tonight with a sense of journalistic purpose and commitment and an impressive depth of knowledge. Ava Martin on our assignment desk has kept the trains running on time for years. Not an easy job, and she's done it with warmth, good humor, and grace. Social media producer Michael Izquierdo is driven and incredible multi-talent and the kind of colleague anyone would be lucky to work with. And our longtime man on the arts and culture beat, Mark Vitale, has an unmatched editorial vision, passion for his work, and deft storytelling skills in multiple arenas. Together, they have helped make WTTW News what it is today. And a tip of the hat as well to our indefatigable crew scheduler, Kim Mattis, and our brilliant photographer-editor, Tim Boyd. You will all be missed. Thank you. And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to check out the season premiere of Chicago Stories here on WTTW at 8 p.m. with Legendary Blizzards. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, well, we were all hoping the Leo High School Choir could take it all the way on America's Got Talent. They
got,
I mean, to make it to the finale, to make it to the top five, what an impressive run.
Really impressive.
Such a cool bunch of guys, too. I was rooting for them. And Simon Cowell said himself, you will inspire many people.
Yeah. So, and they have.
It was fun to see, and fun to see, especially at a time when Chicago is getting a lot of attention and not all of it positive, you know,
right,
to see that kind of representation.
Yeah, South Side, you know, black teens, like it was, it's really
and great. A school that was in danger of closing, you know, several years back, and now to get this kind of attention.
Great story.
Also saw this week Sister Jean of Loyola University.
106 years old.
A well-deserved retirement.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession.